At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome, everybody, to the Minimap Cast. This is minimap.com.au's weekly games podcast, your favorite weekly games podcast. My name is Kerry Palmer, and joining me, as always, is Jeremy Bratstich.
I've got the weirdest feeling like I'm forgetting something as a part of the setup, but like I've got recording there, and I've got recording there, and the live stream is there, and I've got everything. Like I have done everything,
yeah.
But I just feel like I'm forgetting something. But
I mean, I think it's the topic.
No, it's not that. It's like a process thing that I've missed at some point, but like that's definitely not the case.
Okay. It's not like looking at your notes or something.
No, like cuz like I I've got the notes up as well and I've got everything, but for some reason it's just one of those silly feelings.
Sam in the chat asks if you forgot to put pants on.
Ah! My dick.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Kerry.
How's your weekend?
Good. It was good. We did a live stream.
We did do a live stream along with 12 other people. Yeah,
I should phrase that. We partook in a charity stream that was not hosted by us. We didn't do the streaming. We were guests on the stream.
And it was a great time. This was the Halo 2 Table Read charity stream that we were talking about last week.
Yes, yes.
Our
wonderful friends from Game On Cancer invited us to be two prophets from Halo 2 to read their lines amongst a drizzling of miscellaneous Halo 2 characters as well, and go through the game front to back.
Yeah,
reading every bit of dialogue.
I put a bit of work into the voice I was doing, and I found it very very challenging because the prophet's voice I had to replicate was very withered and old man like, and I was like, I actually don't think I can replicate this without hurting myself.
Yeah, right.
So I just did what I could in like a comfortable sense, and we were alongside so many excellent performances.
Yeah.
That show. I said this to everyone afterwards. I don't even want to call anyone out in particular because I think everyone did such a great job.
Yeah.
But we would be sitting there, and the first time we heard was it Umbral doing Tartarus or Dev as Gravemind, it was we like everyone in the stream, in the chat, and then all of us on the stream as well, we're all like, whoa.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
And especially as well, the voice of the Arbiter as well was also very good. That was Terry Fear. Because that is not an easy voice to do. And
no, he no. did. You have to have the register. Like it's you're hard limited on that by the register.
Yeah, and like,
and then you have to perform
a very, very commendable performance, because there's a lot of Arbiter lines as well, and there's a lot of nuance in the Arbiter reads. So it was very impressive by all, I think.
Yes,
it was so fun.
If you want to catch that, you can find the YouTube video on our friend Shane Bailey's channel. That's It's Shane Bailey is the YouTube channel. It's a really fun time. What is it, about 2.5 hours? And it was just so much fun. Shane did a great job of setting the music to each scene. And I got chills so many times thinking about each of those scenes as they came up, like the Covenant ship exploding at the start and thinking of that cutscene from the anniversary edition while it happened, or the slip space jump. Oh, there's so many moments.
Yeah. 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 It was so fucking fun. It was so fucking fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And raised just over a grand.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. Everyone coming together and supporting such a great charity. Yeah. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Kerry.
You said you had something to kick the show off. So
that I
should
do.
Should I do the intro?
Yes, do the intro because it's longer than it will take to get through all of it before you should do the intro.
Yeah, wow. Okay, all right, everyone, strap in. Jeremy's about to bring us something. I don't know what it is, but I'll do the intro and then we'll find out. Hey, thanks all for listening, for being here. This is the Minimapcast, minimap.com.au's weekly games podcast. This podcast goes live on all podcast platforms every Wednesday, with 24 hours of early access given to all of our wonderful patrons. More on that in just a second. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to tell your friends and give the show a positive rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. It makes a huge difference and it only takes a couple of seconds. If you want to get notified every time a new episode is released, you can follow us on social media. That's at MinimapAU on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and also Twitch, where we are live every Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time for the live recording of the Minimapcast. We always hang out with the chat during and before and after. It's a good time. You can also find us on Blue Sky. The handle is just the same as our website, minimap.com.au. Just search that on Blue Sky and you'll find the Blue Sky account. We wanted to say thank you to Shook for letting us use the Moog Model D Improv as the music for the Minimapcast. You can listen to more of Shook's music at shook.bandcamp.com. And finally, Minimap is completely independent and funded almost entirely out of our own pockets. So if you'd like to help keep the mics and lights on, you can support us by going to patreon.com/minimapau and becoming one of our patrons. For only $5 a month, you'll get 24 hours of early access for all episodes of the Minimapcast, as well as extra bonus features and more. You can head on over to patreon.com/minimapau to help us out for an amount that's cheaper than a latte with oat milk. That's it.
Cool.
We did it.
We did it. So, yesterday, I was at home.
Yesterday. Sunday.
Sunday. My birthday. I was at home.
Congratulations. I mean, happy birthday.
Thank you. Congratulations. Made it around once more.
How old are you now? 21?
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I told you that the other day that I had to Google my birthday, right?
No.
Yeah. So I don't celebrate my birthday almost at all. Like it's just not me. But like I had like a 20-minute conversation at work the other day where like we were talking about like age and like what it's like to like move change different parts of your life at different age and stuff, and he's a bit older than me. And I had like a 20-minute conversation where like I was just saying I was 26 turning 27 for the entire conversation.
That's not right.
And it's not correct. It's not correct, but I forgot. I had no idea how old I was. And like we were talking and then for a little bit, like I went silent and I was like trying to work it in my head. And I was like, I have no idea how old I am. And so I had to type in like, just how old am I into Google? And then they're like, what's your date of birth? And I typed in my date of birth and it's like, you're 25. I'm like, okay. Hey, Sam, I'm 25. I'm not 26. I just don't remember.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I thought that you Googled Jeremy Bradetich's birthday.
No.
But yeah, it's funny when you know the year, but
I can't calculate
the date, but like, yeah, putting it ahead like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm born in 97. Right. And so like the 97 is hard to calculate when the last digit of the year is a 3. Like and it's also like close to the end of the year as well. And it's a whole thing.
For me, it's a bit easier, I think, because I'm born in 95.
Right.
Which means that like, it's quite like I could just, if I'm ever unsure, I just move a number over by 5 and figure out how many tens, mm-hmm. you know, like that's it. Which is a very easy shorthand, but yeah,
totally.
I can see that being an issue. I'm getting to the point where I've stopped caring that much and I start forgetting my birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I was at home on my birthday and I was watching a movie. I was watching a movie called Koyaanis Skutsii, which is a 1980s documentary, kind of?
Question mark?
Yeah, well, so the thing is, it's like the film itself is a like hour and 20-minute film where there's no dialogue, there's no narration, there's no characters. It is just footage set to music. And the film is, it's quite an artistic documentary where like the Koyaanis Skutsi, I think, like, I'm not sure what language it is, but I believe it roughly translates into life out of balance.
Out of balance, okay.
And it is a film that is meant to represent like how the world is changing and things are rapidly changing. It was the 1980s. It was the beginning of computers and, you know, all of this like intense commercialization of everything in the West, and how like the world is changing and all of this stuff. It's all right. It's like, you're going to be in the mood for a film where there's not a single word spoken. But like, it's good. I like it. And so I was watching this film mostly. I was also working on my laptop at the same time, but I was watching it. And there's a part in the film where there's a shot, of just like a building that has like been completely like reduced to rubble. And there's some music that plays over it. And I'm just going to quickly play part of that clip right now.
Was it music from the Lair soundtrack?
No, it was not music from the Lair soundtrack.
Okay, I'm trying to join the dots here. I haven't figured it out yet. It's a bit quiet.
This is what it looks like for those who are watching at home.
I think I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's like, well, like, so it's you have, but through me. So,
oh,
I am watching this and like, and my ears perk up. I'm like, I know this song. I've heard this song. And you see, Kerry, my brain is so rotten, so full of rot. I have heard that song before. I'm now going to play from you a clip from the TV show Star Wars Rebels. There is one specific clip in the film where one of the characters named Zeb is a beautiful episode. It's my favorite episode of the entire show. But there's a scene where he's basically using some of the magic from his species, because he's an alien. to use some magic in his species, from his species, to send a ship through like a nebulous wormhole, dangerous part of the galaxy that usually if you fly in you just blow up. This is from that. But it's got
the same music under it, is it?
Almost the exact same music under it. I'll skip ahead briefly to a part where there's not like spaceships getting blown up.
Yeah.
The way through. I don't know how, but the hyperdrive is activated.
Anyway. And so my brain like twigs and I'm like, oh my god, it's from that. And I like freak out and I'm like, is this like a really old classical piece of music, or is this like that like more than you realize people eat? But no, it's the song was written for Koyaanis Skutsi by a composer named Philip Glass, who's like a well-known composer.
Yes, I've played music from Philip Glass before, or yeah. I've heard it.
Yeah. And then I continue the film, and there's another part in the film where the soundtrack is this. This is Koyaanis Skutsi again. This plays at both the very beginning and the very end of the.
Is that the name of the film?
Yes, it is. Yes,
that the Gregorianly chanting.
Yes, I'm now going to play for you, Kerry, from again Star Wars Rebels, the Admiral Thrawn's theme. They're chanting Thrawn. Now, this piece is not not nearly as close as the previous two, but there's definitely a bit of inspiration happening there. And so I Google it, and I find out that the composer of Star Wars Rebels...
You Googled Star Wars Rebels, Kony Scutzi.
I literally Googled that exact thing, and I found out that the composer of Star Wars Rebels was directly inspired by Philip Glass, which I didn't know that. So I am now deeply, deeply tempted to email the composer of Star Wars Rebels. I forget his name. It's Kevin something. And like be like, hey, I just watched Kony Scutzi, like tell me I'm right, basically. I also think it's very funny that from this point onwards, because since all of the Rebels characters now appearing in Ahsoka show and the future Star Wars film directed by Dave Filoni, we got that Thrawn song in Ahsoka as well,
right?
But they were diegetically chanting Thrawn.
Oh, in the world,
in the world.
Yeah,
we have weirdly enough, we will get music from Kony Scutzi in one of the next Star Wars films in this weird roundabout inspirational way.
Yeah, that's really strange.
Which I think is kind of neat.
It's cool. And it's nice to see that sort of, you know, inspiration and homage and sort of things like that. It's just strange to see that like outlet for inspiration being one of the biggest media properties in the entire world.
Yes, totally. and like Star Wars does it all the time. Like Star Wars completely like is lifted from Kurosawa films and a bunch of other stuff. Like Lucas has said that. But I think there's also something neat about something really fucking weird. Like, Kony Scutzi is a weird film. It is not a popular film. It is definitely like cult in that space. And it is fun to see a direct through line of the person making this weird experimental thing eventually make its way into Star Wars directly.
Yes.
Which is why it's important that you make weird shit. Everybody. But also
we do it every week.
But also I had no one to tell this to, because the Venn diagram of people who have seen Star Wars Rebels and the Venn diagram of people who have seen Kony Scutzi is, I don't know, like in my world, I'm the only one in there. If you've seen both of those things, you should tell me on Twitter or whatever so we can be friends. But at the moment, it's a lonely room, and so I
think there's a third smaller circle in there, which is Philip Glass.
It'll be Kevin.
I guess so.
I doubt Kevin. I doubt Philip Glass saw Rebels.
Well, I guess he's the crossover.
yes. me and Phil are in the middle of the Venn diagram. So I message two people. I message my best friend who's really into Star Wars and my other best friend who's really into film.
Yeah.
And I had to explain.
You tried to bridge the gap for them.
I had to explain each other's half to be like, this is neat. And they both thought it was cool, but also very weird.
Yep.
So
that is eerily very similar to that Lair soundtrack moment I had, where I heard the Lair soundtrack and it sounded so similar to the Outer Wilds soundtrack.
Yeah.
Where I heard that one song in one Digital Foundry video and I'm like, hang on.
So there you go.
I've just messaged a friend of mine from high school and said, did we ever play something by Philip Glass in school?
I can't
remember, because I know the name in that very, like, I'm sure I've played your work before kind of a way.
Yeah, right.
So hopefully Tom comes in with the goods.
Yeah, I'm just having a look at like
stuff. He's done so much. I've been scrolling through. He's done too much, honestly, for me to identify what it might be that I've played from him.
He's still alive. I didn't know that.
He's 86.
Cool.
That's old.
But yeah, that was like, I was kind of at home, like just like scratching my head, being like, what is going on? I always related everything.
Like, is it just me? Am I imagining this?
I was like, I always relate everything to Star Wars, but like, how did this happen?
Yeah. It's very cool. It's very you.
Year like four, all of it, isn't together. It just?
It's very you.
Yes, yes.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, there you go.
Thank you for taking us on that ride.
No worries.
Now you have even more people to talk to about this strange phenomenon.
Yes.
The strange moment in time.
The strange moment that is Star Wars brain.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a clean follow-up for that with anything. Like, I don't think I would ever have any kind of follow-up for that. I guess except talking about Lair and Outer Wilds. So let's get on to talking about video games, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
Now, everyone, it's going to be a shorter episode this week. We're gearing up for end of year, so we're playing stuff in the lead up to sort of end of year discussions.
Yes.
And so that means, you know, we've been playing a lot this week, and also we haven't got a topic for this week. So we're going to give you what we've been playing, and then that'll be the show.
Yeah.
But that's fine. It's a nice casual catch up today. In case the first 20 minutes of this show didn't set the tone for you already, I'll just lay it out for you explicitly.
What do you mean? I had the breathing room to go all the way into that whole thing.
Exactly. And we're still going to be early.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to touch on a bit what I've been playing, and then you've got a whole thing you want to get into. So, yeah. What am I here to talk about? Everyone, it's the third week straight of Armored Core 6 content coming from Kerry on the Minimap Cast. And it's going to be much shorter than the last couple of times because it's not just about me getting back into it, and it's not just about me finishing the game and then getting into the whole like loop thing that they're doing. It's about me wrapping up. And I finished the third playthrough, which is when you get the true ending of the game and you get like a new credit sequence, which is the same people, but it's like different music and different images under it. Feels very like full circle. You've completed the game. You actually did it. Well done. The final boss of that playthrough is the hardest fight I've had to do since completing my first playthrough.
Hell yeah.
Which was great. It was awesome to have that challenge at the end.
Yeah, nice.
Pardon?
I said that's what you want, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because both of the final bosses in endings 1 and 2, I found easy. I think I first tried both of them, or no, not the no, first no, one. I yeah, think I did that in like, I did that in like 20 or 30 minutes though. It wasn't long.
Yeah.
This boss took me like 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. Right.
And it was good. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, I'm like, what am I going to do? And I ended up beating it with just like three sets of missiles and a sword. It was really weird. But it worked. It was great. Anyway, the third ending, the reason this isn't going to take very long is because I don't want to spoil the ending. But a lot of what the third playthrough does is it unravels some of those mysteries that they were sprinkling in the first and second playthroughs, where you're like, hang on, that never got addressed. They give you more of that in the third one, and they unspool it a bit. And I was very invested. I'm like, what's going to be different? What's going to be the same? There's this sort of sinister overtone sort of happening over the top of all this. End of chapter 4, things start diverging drastically, and I don't know what's happening, and this and that, and I get to the end confrontation, and I get to the credits, and I get to the end, and I'm like, I think that was my least favorite playthrough.
Oh, really? That's annoying.
And I was saying something, we were talking in the pre-show about Call of Duty,
yep.
And we were talking about playing Black Ops, and how that game has this really interesting story where there's a mystery that sort of unravels throughout the whole thing, and then there's a twist and you understand what was happening and sort of recontextualizes everything, but it's still it wraps it up neatly at the end too. It's a whole concise complete story. And what I found when playing Armored Core 6 in that third playthrough, the mystery was very fun to be a part of and to see unravel and to have those questions and be like, oh, something's different, what's this, what's that. That whole experience was fun, but looking at actually what happened as a whole, as like the story from beginning to end, at least of that third playthrough, I actually just found it wanting. I found it didn't make much sense. I still had a lot of questions, which I guess is just From Software's bag. I was just asking questions or making you ask questions that they will not answer. And yeah, overall, I found, I was like, oh, I love that the final boss was this. And okay, the last cutscene was whatever, but like motivations of characters and reasonings why things happened. Like, I actually don't understand why the final boss fight took place. Like, I'm like, why did this happen? I don't understand why. Yeah, it's right. A cool fight, and it like the characters are sort of interesting that are there, whatever, but I don't understand why it happened at all. For it to be the final encounter, and for it to have me sort of feeling bemused by the end of it was a bit of a letdown.
Right.
So yeah, I am still so glad I did it, and I am really wholeheartedly in love with this game. I wish it had been such a like triumphant finish that had allowed me to want to play through even again for a fourth time and keep going and find the extra stuff. Because now all the only trophies I've got left are S rank all the missions, which I just might never do. But the rest of it is like find all the weapons, find all the components, find all the mech parts. And it's like, oh, great, I could look up a guide, cross-reference my list of parts and see which ones I'm missing and go and get those. I'd be happy to do that to work towards a platinum. But I finished the game and I saw that. I'm like, oh, yeah, I might get to that. And I just haven't gone back. And I know I would have kept going if the ending had kept me in there, but it really kind of spun me out by the end, you know? And I felt like I was looking out from the outside. I'm like, that was neat. I'm going to go do something else now.
Yeah. And I think that's fine.
Like, it is fine. It is.
That's
not a problem.
Yeah.
It just, I wanted to continue to be as enthusiastic as I had been last week. You know, I know,
but also you like,
of course that would end on its own at some point, right?
Yeah. But also you wouldn't be getting maybe what you wanted by just going and getting more pieces of armor, which is more story.
Yes, that's true.
Like you'll get a little bit, like you'll get the flavor text of the guns and stuff, but like you won't get like the plot.
No, you're right. There's nothing left to unravel, right? There's nothing left to experience anew. But outside of trying new loadouts. But me falling out of it like this is indicative of how sort of disappointing it was, I guess.
That's
my Armored Core 6 update. I love that game. I love that game so much. And that third playthrough is worth it for the journey and for that final fight. Absolutely. And you know, you get new unlocks and all of that. But yeah, just a little miffed about that.
Is it worth now doing what I do, which is you find some YouTubers you like, and then you live through the highs of that game.
Oh, again.
Through someone else. And enjoy them going, oh, look at that fucking worm. And then like the, I won't miss. And they're like, what do you mean I won't miss? And when you're like, oh! Because they're like, oh!
I wanted to do that with Andy because I watched him when I beat Baltaeus in August. I was like, Andy Cortez, this is. I went and looked at his channel to be like, oh, let me see how you fought this and how long it took you and what you thought at the start originally and whatever.
Yeah.
But he fell off of regularly streaming it, so I don't have his reaction for the worm fight or the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And
you gotta find someone that's
actually
like,
it didn't pull that much attention on YouTube outside of like the heavy like PvP scene. And Vardy's still, he's making a lore video, but he's been working on one this entire time that apparently is more than 3 hours long at this point and still isn't out.
Oh, that's so exciting, though.
It is, although, honestly, I just want his take on the ending without having to watch a 3-hour video.
Yeah, right.
So, I don't think it's a bad idea, but yeah, it's just a little disappointing.
Yeah.
But yeah, excellent game. Going to be sitting very high on my personal list this year.
Yeah, me too.
I ended up playing a bit of Diablo, sort of something a bit relaxing. I've heard good things about the new season. not really that much is different, except the game does feel a bit better in season two because they've got a whole that they've juiced up the experience gains and all of that. However, I was playing through and I was like, this feels really good right now. Like, I feel I'm crunching through these levels, and when I was doing this for work, it wasn't going this fast. And then it turns out they're doing like a free week for Diablo 4, including a 35% XP and gold gains boost across the board at all times. And I'm like, oh, that's why it feels better, because it's artificially inflated and it's not going to be like this in the future. And I was thinking, like, I'm so glad I happened to jump into it this week when it was boosted and it felt just fun to play, because I probably had the best time I probably could have, and I've had my fill, and I'll just leave it be now.
Yeah.
Because I don't know when the boost ends. But it's like, if it's like that all times, I'd probably stick around all times.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that.
It's funny how kind of busted their XP is.
Yeah.
Their treadmill is too obvious, I think, is the problem with that game.
Yeah, right. Like, I know a lot of people like at work and stuff who are really into Diablo.
Mm.
And they're also not super into this one either.
Yeah.
It's been... I think it has not hit nearly as hard as they were hoping.
No, it doesn't have that same everlasting impression that 2 and 3 had.
Yeah, and, know, like, 3 didn't have it at the beginning either. It's like, it took a while for 3
to get there. True, it was a rough launch.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So just wanted to mention that. That Diablo has only been fun because it's completely, completely busted at the moment. But yeah, that's kind of it for me for this week. You know, played a bit of Zelda, I played a bit of Cyberpunk, but nothing really to talk about.
Mm.
How about you, Jeremy?
I played a video game called The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
Ah, excellent.
Mm. I'm not sure if you're aware of that one. That one's the sequel to The Breath of the Wild, they say.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one. Bit of an indie sleeper, if I remember. A bit of a cult classic. Yeah.
An independent game, self-published independent game.
Yeah, exactly. I hope it gets its flowers this year at the Game Awards.
Yeah. I finished it.
Oh.
I rolled credits.
I was with you playing that game like a week ago and you hadn't finished it.
No. I was not far from the ending. But
okay.
But in true modern like current era of Zelda, you're never really far from the ending.
Right.
You can there's the mainline quests that you should do prior to the ending, but you can do it prior to those. But realistically, they're not actually that far away. You know, like, it's like Breath of the Wild, even more so, you can finish that game within minutes.
Yeah, like you don't even have to visit each of the 4 towns.
Yes. But I did do all of the main line quest stuff in Tears of the Kingdom, as well as I did the entirety of the depths. Let me rephrase that. I charted all of the depths. I didn't do everything there is to do in the depths. There's some bosses in there that I've not done. And there's some areas that I've just not bothered to go through. Like, I can see another Yiga fucking thing over there. I'm like, no. but I've done all of the mines in the depths, and I've also mainly because, like, you don't explore them. Like, you just go there and you're just in the mine. And there's just a piece of armor there.
There's facilities down there that, like, break my brain a bit, where it's like, there are so many moving parts here that I can interact with and I don't know what I'm meant to do.
Yeah.
That I assumed were part of the story, but I get there and I'm like, what the fuck is happening here?
There's not a lot, like, there's actually not a lot to do down there. There's not a lot of interactable parts of it that aren't enemies, Yiga things, chests, bosses,
pose,
and like the some of the zonai stuff, like just like foundries and things, so basically where I was at last week is I was up to when you go to Hyrule Castle, after you go to the four you do the four temples, and then you go to Hyrule Castle the first time. That is where I was up to. And then I did the rest of that in like a week and a half, like the second half of the game in a week and a half. By this point, I was a lot stronger and I'd done a bunch of the stuff. Like I'd done most of the depths already by that point, and I'd done...
And you'd explored around the map, so you didn't have to like walk all the way to a brand new area. Like you could start from a lookout tower or something.
And I'd done a lot of side stuff, and I'd upgraded a lot of my like a lot of my slots and stuff, and had like some okay armor and a lot of food. So I was like, I was ready to go. But then, yeah, so I did the Master Sword quests, and then I did the Hyrule. I explored nearly all of Hyrule Castle, as far as I'm aware. And then did the final, like, story chunk. But I did all of that prior to a different story mission. And so what was really funny is that I did all of this story stuff without it actually asking me to, but I knew I could see where the thread was taking me, but I just wasn't actually up to it yet. And then I did the story stuff that I was up to, and I go back to Pura in the main town just outside of Hyrule Village, and she's like, "All right, hey, cool, nice. Well, you've done that now after I did that story quest that was meant to be before everything that I did." Yeah. She's like, "All right, now go do this." Dot dot dot. And I was like, "What? You've already done it? Okay. Well, now it's time to go do this." Dot dot dot. What? You've already done it? Like, and like did that three or four times.
Yeah, wow.
And then she's like, "All right, go kill Ganondorf." And I was like, "Oh, all right."
Imagine being a character and getting to say that. Hey? Imagine being a character and getting to say that.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got the Breath of the Wild mission, which is destroy Ganondorf.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And then I did.
At this time, how much of the depths had you explored?
By the time I was ready to destroy Ganondorf, I'd done all of it.
Okay.
I did all of that leading up to it. Because I was like, okay, I've now got an internal checklist of things that I want to do. What do I want to do before I go actually take him down? It's like, I need the Master Sword. I need... I wanted to get X amount of hearts. I literally just wanted to get second layer of hearts. Mm-hmm. I had enough stamina. I needed like a bunch of food. And I was like, I need armor that I look cool in. I need to just keep getting armor until I'm like, all right, I've got a set that together works in a way that I look like Link. I feel like Link. I feel like I need Ganondorf killing threads, basically.
Yeah. You need not plot armor in terms of like... You need plot armor. You need armor that's like that fits the plot.
Yes. And I found that. So I had the Cap of Wind, I had the Twilight Tunic, and the Pants of Time, I think is what it was. So it's like just like three hodgepodge Zelda like of past pieces of armor. But the Cap of Wind gives Link the big coif thing that he used to have in the old box art, which I love.
Oh, with his hair.
Yeah. So
the Tunic of Twilight is a normal Link looking tunic from Twilight Princess.
Yeah. I went between that and the Tunic of Time, which is just the one from Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
But the one of the armor of time that you can get, which is just the hat, the tunic, and the pants. They make Link look like an adult wearing very large kids' clothing.
Well, I think those ones, I think they're meant to evoke the the NES illustrations.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, which I've never really...
Kind of, but it also looks like the Ocarina of Time amiibo is also what it looks like when he's got the ocarina.
You mean this one?
Yes. Like he doesn't look like an adult there. He looks like a 12.
That's he's meant to be 14, so that works.
There you go. Yeah. Whereas in the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, he's
20. He's a very small, scrawny adult.
Yeah.
He's a man.
He's a young adult, but he's still an adult. And so I didn't super love him wearing that. I got my checklist down, and then like, all right, I'm gonna go destroy Ganon.
Cap of the Wind is Wind Waker hat.
Yes.
I assumed it was Skyward Sword hat.
No.
Right. Yes. No, that makes sense.
But like, I had a bunch of other like Zelda weapons, which I'm not super familiar with because I've not played a lot of 3D ones. Like I had the Dusk Blade or whatever, and I had like another named blade that started with a B.
But like, Goron sword.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah, that sword rules. That's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
When I found that sword in this game, I literally was there like, like I was. Yeah. I had such a like fanboy moment myself.
So like I had a bunch of like what I kind of classified as like plot weapons.
Yeah.
And I was just
swapping
between those if I ever needed to.
Yeah.
Because like before the fight, there's like a bunch of like goons that you fight before them. And then you go and fight Ganon.
Big G.
Yeah. The ending's fine.
Okay.
It's not like it's better than the Breath of the Wild ending.
Hmm.
Like I'm talking like fight and cinematic and all that stuff. But like I'm not like I don't care about the ending in either of these games really. Like
I'm
not gonna think about them in that way.
I was hoping this one would hit a little better.
So was I, and I went back and watched the final trailer of the game prior. After I rolled credits because I was like the vibe of that trailer is not the vibe of this game.
Like a bit more cinematic, a bit more bombastic.
A bit more story heavy.
Yeah.
And like they kind of just do the Breath of the Wild thing again. And I'm not saying that it's the same game, but they do the way they tell that story is almost identical.
Mm.
And that's not that fun when I've already done that before.
Well, also the way they told the story in Breath of the Wild, I think, was one of their weakest design choices.
Like, I actually don't mind it in Breath of the Wild. I think it fits thematically, and I enjoyed it enough.
Yeah.
But they're doing, like, heavy character moments and named characters and character dynamics a lot in this game, a lot more. And they're doing, you know, intrinsic links between characters of old and current characters, you know, between the whatever your group of pals are and the group of pals from the hundreds of years ago
and they're doing time travel,
their relationship with Zelda and their relationship with Link and all that stuff and Link's relationship with Zelda. But it feels so disconnected in this one that I think that was a mistake. And especially like I'm very lightly talking about things here. And this is not a surprise for you, but like Ganon has no connection almost to Link in this game. That
right.
When the fight happens, like aside from the concept of the Hero of Time and the concept of the Demon King, I had no actual connection between the two physically fighting.
You just knew of the conflict from years prior and you were just sort of ending that conflict in a sort of drawn out way.
That it almost felt superficial a little bit. It's got a little bit more to it than that, but I sort of came out of it going like they ended it because they needed to do Ganondorf because they felt like they needed to do Ganondorf. And that isn't really, like, realistically, that's not good enough.
Like, it's not a fun way to tell a story.
No. And Ganondorf, I think, is really quite cool in this game. I love his design. I love his original character thesis in this game. I think that's really dope, and I love what they do with him being and becoming the Demon King and all that stuff. But his connection to the game that you're playing is very minor. And it felt kind of weak towards the end.
It's interesting, right? Because he triggers the upheaval. He starts the game. He triggers the game like redefining itself.
Yeah, and like
but that's the very 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 start of the game.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of how in previous games, like you'll hear like in Wind Waker, for example, how he is occupying this forsaken fortress in the corner of the map.
Yeah,
and he sits there in his ship, like biding his time, And then things start to move, and he starts like redefining the world around you, like as he finally starts making moves.
Yeah.
But it takes a while for him to do that, and then you feel that presence. Same in Ocarina of Time, you know, that big world shift in the middle point of the game, or Twilight Princess. So yeah, not getting that shift from this. Yeah, getting that shift later in the game, after getting to know the world and then it changes, definitely allows you to feel his presence a bit more. But that's how the game starts here. So yeah, no, it's a funny issue.
Yeah. Yeah, and it felt like it didn't feel amateurish, but it just felt kind of dull. Or like blunt, I think, is maybe like as in like not as in not blunt as in obvious, blunt as in like not sharp.
Like unrefined.
Yeah. It's just awkward. It's kind of an awkward thing in a game that could have built on Breath of the Wild as like, we've got this perfect sandbox, this perfect world for you to go in. Now we're going to tell this Lord of the Rings bombastic ass story with... And like the characters overall in this game, I think are all right. Like I enjoy nearly all the Guardians. I enjoy Link's, you know, crew of you know, brainiacs that are helping this fucking twink move around the planet faster than ever. Yeah. And I enjoy the connection to the Zonai and the presence of Zelda from hundreds of years ago. Like all that stuff I think is good. But they just don't do enough with it. And maybe they were too scared of getting in the way of the gameplay. Which is like a shame, because I wanted Link to go on like a tremendous adventure.
Yes.
And I wanted the adventure to almost happen to Link this time, because he's
rather than you make your own fun or make your own stories in like almost entirely.
Well, yeah, because like you're gonna do that anyway. Like just the nature of the exploring of that world and being in that space, you're gonna create your own adventures. But we've had like Link is a known quantity in this world. You go everywhere and you're like, you're Link. Like, and it's not like, who are you?
Or the people are like, I don't know who you are, but man, I hope to meet that master swordsman one day.
Yeah, or like who are you? And Link just silently shakes his hands for a sec. And he's like, oh, you're Link, the protector of Zelda. You're looking for Zelda. Like, everybody knows what's going on. Like, no one is like, what the fuck is going on? And no one is complaining about the Sky Temples being so confused and why isn't the Queen doing anything? Like, everybody's almost on the exact same page.
Hmm.
And you're the one that still has to find everything, but you're finding everything in a world that you've already explored for 130 hours back in 2017.
Yeah.
It's awkward. And
yes,
it's not that it's unforced, but it felt like a thing that they didn't have to relearn.
Well, you could see plain as day, clear as day is what was happening there.
Uh-huh.
In the first game, that they did everything they could to make the game as open as they could, including making the story completely, but both open-ended and optional. Yes, with the four divine beasts, which you can do or you can decide not to do, but also with those like key memories where you go and you find the certain spot and that then shows you a memory of how the calamity happened.
Yes.
Through the eyes of Link and Zelda. That story of Zelda trying to find her powers and there's nothing that can awaken them, it's actually quite good when you stitch it all together.
Yeah.
And it's quite moving. I remember watching it all in the lead up to Tears of the Kingdom being like, this is good.
And
it's just so hard to absorb when you watch 1 3-minute cutscene every 10 hours.
I feel almost the exact same way about the tear memories in Tears of the Kingdom. Do you have all of them?
Not all of them. I've seen a lot of them. The thing is, a lot of the like glyphs that you get, there's like 10 or 12 glyphs, but there's like 18 memories.
Yeah.
Because they like other things that happen. Like I think stuff just happens in the story. Yeah. So like, even if I had them all, I wouldn't have them all.
Sure.
I've done a lot of the glyphs though. Like I would say like 4/5 of them all.
You've got a good idea of what's going on.
Yes.
And that's also really good. What's there? Like the film that they've hidden inside of the game, the short animated film is quite good and endearing and engaging. And I want to know more and I want to know what happens next.
Incoming Hyrule Warriors game.
Yeah. Right. You know, that game's not canon.
I had forgotten that.
Yeah, you've
told me that before.
Yeah, I didn't know that until after. But like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. Like, it felt like they were almost too scared to go further away from Breath of the Wild, which is like, again, wild. Because I went back to that trailer and I'm looking at this trailer. I'm like, this trailer is so story driven. It's all character driven. And it feels like Link going on like an adventure where the world is happening and moving and things are attacking him and he's attacking back and building these creations to overcome this power. And Ganon's in it like over and over again and all this stuff. And I'm like sitting here going like, this is like an adventure game. But then the game doesn't feel like that.
Actually, it's a fan trailer of it.
Kind
of. Cut together of all,
of all the really exciting parts. I feel... But it's funny because I actually feel like I'm more engaged in the moment-to-moment gameplay of this than I was in Breath of the Wild by the end.
Definitively.
Well, like, so it's not like that for everybody. Some people enjoy the gameplay of Breath of the Wild more.
No, I'm saying for you.
Oh, yeah.
Definitively for you.
Totally. Like, in the sense that, like, I might keep playing a little bit more now that I've rolled credits, which I didn't for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, wow.
But, like, not much more. Like, I've got, like, it's kind of just the bucket list stuff that I didn't need, feel the need to do before Ganon. But, yeah, it's interesting. I keep going back and forth if it's going to go on my game of the year.
Oh, wow.
Because, like, I think it'll edge in.
Honestly, I'm a little in the same place, but not in kind of a, like, I question it and then it always ends up there.
Yeah. In a way. And I think that, like, overall the story, I think, is not told well enough. But, like, the gameplay is good. Which leads me to my weird point, which I mentioned to you the other day.
Yes, I was just about to bring this up if you didn't. Yes. Yeah.
The best part of this game is the depths.
I
don't agree.
I would like you to explain your position, please, Jeremy.
What if I don't have an explanation?
You're on the wrong podcast.
I don't know. It's really fascinating because, like, I think the sky stuff is not super fun. Like
it's pretty thin at the end of the day, isn't it?
And it takes fucking forever to get anywhere. Mostly because I don't have the as good ability to fly like I do in Breath of the Wild. If I had that ability,
the BTBs, the bomb jumps.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I just had the ascend into the air dramatically ability that I did in Breath of the Wild, I'd probably enjoy doing the sky stuff more, but the little pigeon isn't. It's not as good the ability that you get in this. The
little pigeon.
Like, have you done all the thingos, all the temples?
No, not all the temples. Right. I got one left.
Right. Is it the sky temple?
No. Oh, you mean the Rito?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I have done that. I have done the
right. Yeah, temple. Yeah. The ability that you get in that is like just like
go forward.
Yeah, go forward a bunch. Yeah, and the cooldown is really high, and it like, and you got to have him out to do it. Like, there's a lot of reasons that is not as good as the one that you've had in Breath of the Wild, and more importantly, like doesn't feel as good.
You're talking about the power up you get after you beat the Rito Temple in Breath of the Wild. Are you?
Yeah.
Valley
Scale? Yeah.
I thought you meant the bomb glitch where you use bombs to launch yourself.
Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. No, I meant
you meant the one where you hold the button and you go straight up.
Yes, yeah. That felt so much better in that game than this does in this game, to the point where I'm like, I just really wish I had that instead of this little pigeon boy.
Well, you know what you have instead? You have Ascend.
Yes, but if I'm trying to get over there...
Yes, it isn't good for starting a glide.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Anyway, but like the sky stuff I think is not super great, and like if you're not in the mood to do stuff that feels like Zonai themed temples 100% of the time, then you don't really have anything else to do up there. But the depths is kind of this like, it's kind of like a proving ground. Like you've got this like this area where the enemies are tougher. You've got the room to explore and experiment with your building mechanics.
You also find less stuff, you know. You're not going to find steak and fruit and pots to cook with.
Yeah. And you've got to, like, you've still got to do a whole bunch of, like, traversal and platforming stuff and, like, ascending
through... There's goop everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and on top of that, you've got this additional constraint on your health, which is the gloom, the corruption type thing where like it reduces your maximum health, and then you have to go to one of the light routes to like do it, and there's like nearly no friendly NPCs, and there's a lot of really cool exploring, and it being like the mirror image of the overworld, like it feels like really cool Zelda stuff. Like it feels like the other world, whatever it's called in Link to the Past.
The Dark World in Link to the Past.
The Dark World. Yeah. And it's like there's this overwhelming feeling whenever you're in the overworld that like there's like a tremendous amount of danger right below you at all times. And then you see more chasms, and like just another way of reminding you like it's like this like evil devil like tempting you into hell. Like, come on, like You know you want to see what's down here.
Yeah.
It's so fucking cool.
It is really cool. And it's such a great moment because they didn't give us that before.
No.
I love that they hid this from us.
Yeah. And it's also like the themes of that are so cool, especially with this, like that leans into like Ganondorf, like pulling strings more than he actually does in the game, of this idea that like, everything that you live, this entire world that you're trying to build, like below you is hell. Like I will fuck you up and raise your level down to this if you don't win. Yeah.
Like all of your foundations are hollow.
Yes. Yeah. It is so sick. And also like, it's kind of, that feels like a Breath of the Wild style, let's rethink everything we know about RPG worlds. Like, what if we gave you the entire world again, but below it and harder, which you can enter and exit as you please. But, like, you'll have to go down there sometimes. It's so cool. I think it's, like, it's one of those, like, I love the idea of it so much that it has just, like... That is what I'm going to associate with that game more than anything, which is wild considering how much of the game's marketing was all about you go into the sky.
Yes.
And how much of that part of that game I don't care about almost at all.
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it's sick. And there's some stuff down there that you haven't seen yet. The thing that you do after the four temples, I'll tell people, I think is... fucking sucks.
Oh no.
It's really shit, and I then almost ignored it forever. It's not good. It is not good, and felt really weird. Like felt like a student game kind of like mod.
Oh no.
And I know what they were trying to do, but they did not execute it on correctly. I'm excited for you to get to that point.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to it. I had my own Zelda moment this weekend. It was last night, where I decided to liberate Lurelin village of the pirate infestation. And so I did that.
I did that.
And then I rebuilt the town.
I'm in the process of rebuilding the town.
Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah. Really nice. A great way to make that place seem more memorable, because it really was a bit just kind of there last game.
Yeah. It's why it took forever for me to actually go there again in Tears of the Kingdom, because like, I remember that place. That place sucks. And I go there, I'm like, oh, it's... There's goblins everywhere.
yep, totally. And like they were so heavily signposting it. Like everywhere I went, they were like, oh, I'm from Lurelin Village. You wouldn't believe what's going on over there. It's like, I know.
Yeah, I was like,
pirates, yep. Yeah, you're all displaced. You're refugees, whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah, sure wouldn't. Anyway.
So I did that. I rebuilt the village. And then I went to Eventide Island. And then I went down into the depths in Eventide. And there's no lights down there. So I just hit the ground.
Did you die?
Very funny. Yeah. I had a fairy,
yeah.
But I would have. And I'm going through it. And I'm like, right, what the hell am I doing? Why am I here? Oh, that's right. The last thing I wanted to do before going to the Gerudo village was get the fairy that's on the way there. All I need to do is find this one musician who's somewhere in the Farron Woods, which is why I started in Lurelin village like 8 hours of gameplay ago. And so I'm like, right. Cool. All I need to do is go through the Farron Woods. Oh, I remember this area. This is the one with all the waterfalls and the yellow dragon comes through here a lot. And I look at the map and I'm like, oh, this area is so big. And I want to do everything I see when I go through, but I want to get to Gerudo, but I want to find the... And I actually just overwhelmed myself for the first time when playing these games. And I was like, what am I going to do? I don't want to not find the musician and not find the... not open the fourth fairy and like...
You need some blinders.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I do. And because I do want to get to the rest of the story. And it's okay if I don't do every shrine before the end, like at the end of the game or at the end of the day. Yeah. But it was so funny just sort of like being in it and enjoying it and being like, oh yeah, this is great.
Yeah. Cause like we've spoken about this in the past, but like when I'm playing these games, I need to feel like I'm making progress every time I play. And I can have like one or two sessions here where I'm like, oh, I just fucked around for a bunch of hours and like, that's fine. As long as I make progress next time. And then I do that. I'm like, okay, good. But like, if I feel like I'm floundering at any point, then I will fall off.
Yeah.
It kind of happened this time when I was playing and then I like came back, but it was also like more games were coming out. So I was also overwhelmed with just playing a bunch, but like, yeah, like I put heavy blinders on when I was doing this, but I was putting heavy blinders on very specific things as well. It's like, okay, like I've done the entire Zora, like I did the Zora village ages ago, but I've got this quest in my backlog to find the like the Zora like pants, and I was like, oh, like fuck it, I'll do that. And when you come back, you have like they send you back through all of the areas you go through just before you go to the temples. And they like it's changed a little bit because you've like usually fucked something up in there, which then sends you out. But you can go back in after it's changed, and then like it's just like a little bit different. But like it was a reason to revisit that place and just go in and grab a chest and then dip.
Yeah.
And then they also send you back into the temples again to find like another piece of armor that they've placed in there.
Oh, fun!
Which is neat. And like there's nearly no enemies there at that point, so you get to freely explore it a little bit more and be like, oh, like yeah, like this is. I remember when I was here, and you, like you're not there for long. And that was neat to revisit those things and be like, oh, like neat. Like I remember being here and having a reason to be here. And now it's much easier and I can just sort of like appreciate the look of it and then leave again. But yeah, like I blinded myself into just getting all the Zora armor because I don't actually know what it looks like when I put it all on and kind of look like an idiot, but like it's, I've got it now. And that was enough for me to be like, yeah, cool. Like did a thing. Time for next thing.
Yeah, totally. I felt really motivated in that lower section of the map in Lurelin. You know, like there was such clear objectives and it felt like I could do it all without being sent on meaningless things to do. And then Eventide was so bite-sized and enjoyable.
Yeah. I enjoyed Farron, Eventide.
And then that forest, man, it's just so
You need a you need a flying machine, my friend.
Yes, you're right. And I've often thought that of like, I'm going to walk up this hill. Man, this is taking a while. Oh, that's because they expect me to use my Zonite and just create something where I can just go whoop.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of why they give you that now, because you know the world, so you could just go at it at your own pace.
Yeah, when I went to that town and they're like, oh, we need 20 logs. And I was like, 20 wood? And he's like, no, 20 logs. I'm like, oh, okay. I built a big log transporting vehicle.
Oh, wow. And that was, I didn't do that.
That was great fun. I then drove it into the middle of the forest and I tore the whole place down and I chucked the whole thing in the back of my truck and then I fucking trucked my way back down to the village and I unloaded everything.
Really cool.
And he's like, I'm like, here you go. And he's like, oh, great, 20 logs. I'm like, yeah. Beep, beep.
he was like, oh, there's some up the hill. And there was like just enough if you like took out this group of six and that group of six and there was three in the paddock with the cows.
Yeah.
It was like just enough for me to do that. So I didn't even have, I just cut them down at the top of the hill, stuck them all together and threw this battery of logs down the hill into the village.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And no, I made a truck.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so
made
fun.
A hauler.
Yeah. It's so fun doing that in that game. I think
yeah,
you got to lean into it a bit. You got to be like, what would he do right now? And then
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also spent time. There's an island above Eventide. There's a sky island. And it's nowhere near any other sky island.
Right.
And I spent time trying to build from the very top of Eventide something that would propel me all the way up. But the hot air balloons kept breaking. Like they time out like the wings do after X amount of time. And it's like, if it lasted 30 seconds longer, I'd be there. And then I tried putting like rockets on my shield and jumping off as it was decaying, but then I hit the balloon and just fell back down and then it fell out. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. And I couldn't figure out. At one point, I decided to strap fans to a big block of wood and ride it up. And the block of wood was too heavy and I didn't go anywhere. I'm like, I'm doing this wrong. You know, I'm going to do something else.
do you want me to tell you an easy solution?
Is it two fans on a steering stick?
No, because I don't use that because I think that's boring.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like it's kind of cheat.
Yeah, like I did that once in the depths only because I saw one of the final five things that I was at and I was like right below it, but it was like a sheer wall. And I was like, oh, fuck it. I'll just fan up it. Like, I don't care about this.
Yeah.
But like what you should consider using is those, you can get those platforms that when you hit them, they stay in the air.
Oh, because, yeah. I've always been confused by those, like how to use them most properly.
Well, you know? So you strap a rocket to them. It sends, like the rocket sends it up, and then the moment the rocket disappears, it just stays where you're at.
Yeah, it doesn't sink. Yeah.
So you can keep adding rockets to it, or you can just use it as a platform to like build something to send it further up. Like,
yep.
And then you can use another one again. You can just keep doing it.
I could even just auto build a second air balloon off of it and then go from there. Yeah. I was trying to think how to get a second thing going from the air, but
those are really useful for exactly that scenario.
Yeah.
Cause you can build entire launch pads off of them if you want.
Yep.
They're pretty fun.
Yep. Cool. All right. I will keep that in mind. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good game.
Yeah, it is. I think I'm sitting at like 8.8.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it is.
Yeah, my sentiment is it sits around there, maybe like a strong 9.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like you could make like that case is, and I'd be like, yeah,
it
right.
is fucking fantastic, but yeah, there's just it's the problem. We've done this game once already.
Yeah, but
it's not as special. So it's 120 hours of done this already. In a way, not entirely.
Yeah,
like the building's different. And they include so many different new armor pieces and there's different mechanics and the depths and all of that. But it's not Breath of the Wild for the first time.
No, I think
nothing ever will be again.
I think it's definitely weirder than Breath of the Wild in a way that like this is almost like, you know, like we were making this comparison prior to the game coming out, but like it almost rings even truer now that it's like this sure is the fucking Majora's Mask to Ocarina. in the sense that this is weirder and doesn't hit in the same way that Ocarina does for most people. But there's like, there's maybe more interesting things happening here, but they are definitely, if they don't click for you, they're just not going to click. But the other comparisons of like, it's darker tone and reuses the map and all that stuff. Like so many hilarious comparisons, but I think I overall like it more than Breath of the Wild.
Yes, me too.
But it does.
I think it just doesn't hit as hard as Breath of the Wild.
It does some things. Yeah, it does some things not as well while bringing in new things, which then bring the score up to almost identical to Breath of the Wild in my brain, which is just so fucking weird and cool. It was funny. I was playing this going, is this the last game I play on the Switch?
Yeah.
Probably not, because my understanding is now that, like, we probably won't see the Switch until the Japanese financial new year, which I think is April or May.
April?
Yeah. But, like, my understanding is that they are not going to announce it prior to the end of it.
Right.
Because they want people to buy...
Oh, they want the boosted stock for the next year.
Yeah, like that, but they also want people to buy the Nintendo Switch this year because it's still just selling a lot, and they're happy just to sit on that for a bit. And then...
It'd be silly to undercut themselves.
Yeah, but I think, like, I saw some people, like, industry, like, analysis people, like, thinking maybe, like, an October release with an announcement in May or something.
October release, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Like, they'll do it before the holiday season.
Yes.
But, like, not late, like Xbox and PlayStation.
I feel like it would do well if it was going to come out in the second half of the year. I think it would do well to come out like August, September. You know what I mean? Like with a launch game, like maybe just like a launch game and then something fun coming out in November. I think that could do really well for it.
Yeah, maybe.
That
seems early for a console though.
It is. That would be a weird spot for it.
Like, because they needed to sort of come out. Them releasing it
in March was also weird. So,
well, I think that was because they needed to hit it just before the end of the financial new year.
I guess so.
I think that's why they did that back then. Whereas this time it's like, if they do October, they can build enough, you know, the diehards will get it. Then FOMO will start to set in and then everybody will rush for holiday.
Well, yeah, if diehards will get it, it'll review well, probably. Well, they hope so. And then, yeah, you get that was what happened with the Wii, where it had so much buzz.
Yeah.
Where you couldn't get it. Everyone wanted it. It was a good price for a Christmas gift, and you couldn't get it.
Yeah.
And remember getting consoles for Christmas?
I mean, I remember the week where I got the PS5 and the Xbox Series X in that week, and that felt kind of like Christmas.
Yeah.
Where I had like two very exciting pieces of hardware to unbox within 3 days. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, granted, that was an expensive week, but like, it was fun. It was certainly fun.
Oh man, it's different when you don't pay for it. You know, it's different. Oh, when it's
you mean that? You mean like, remember getting a thing?
Yeah, no, but like getting a console.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, like it's sort of a like, this is, I'm going to use this now for dozens or hundreds of hours to play so many cool things that I couldn't before.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the feeling.
Or like, I'm in the middle of my holidays. This is my next 4 weeks.
I remember the feeling of like, oh, I better get used to this because I'm just going to be on this for like 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember that with the launch of the PS4. I remember that with the launch of the PS3 being like, there's like a menu before this fucking, like before I click into the game.
Yeah.
Internet settings. What the hell is that?
Ooh, I could put my photos on here.
Yeah. Like, oh, like Sony Xperia Music. What is this? Cause it was before they had like everything at that point was like rent movies through Sony.
Yeah.
They were doing all their own thing back then. Put a CD into your PlayStation 3, download the songs onto the console itself, and then...
Could you do that? Could you download them?
like you could rip songs from a CD onto the console to load onto local storage.
I had no idea you could do that.
Because a bunch of games also had the ability to play music that was saved on your console in the game. And the remake of Wipeout HD, had a bunch of game modes that were like abstract art. Like there was, like it would be the same models of all the tracks and the ships, but the shaders and stuff would be whack and like trippy and really stuff. And they would be reactive to the music that you were playing.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It was so fucking sick.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, I think the days of surprise new consoles are behind us, but that's okay.
For us, definitely. Like for us. We're too close to it now.
Yeah.
I think that's basically the end of my Tears of the Kingdom time, basically. Like I might go back here and there, but like I don't expect to talk about it on the podcast anymore. That's basically my review, is that like I think it's overall very good. It's got some really cool new additions. I wish they improved on what Breath of the Wild did with its plot and narrative. But it's almost worse because they didn't. Even though the highs of this story, I think, are higher than Breath of the Wild, overall, they don't tell it well enough.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I really felt Breath of the Wild was let down by how they told their story, not what the story was.
Right.
So I'm not surprised to hear that in a way, like it makes sense, but it is a shame.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope I enjoy it more than you did. I might not, but
yeah, like I would be surprised if you kind of don't come out of it the same way I do, because I think we're both looking at this in a very similar lens, and it just doesn't really have a whole lot going for it at the very end.
Damn.
Like it's not even like it's what's there is bad. It's just like what there is almost missing. Like I felt like I missed a chapter of like Ganon and Link like working out each other.
Yeah. Freaking. Yeah, like Link being a bit more personally invested, or
yeah, or Ganon just being there, like feeling that pressure of him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Truly is the Ant-Man of the Zelda series.
Is the Ant-Man and fucking Yellow Jacket.
Yes, yes. Yeah, like there's like a shock at the end where the villain says the main character's name, like which is like, if that's a shock in your film, that's not a very good thing. Yeah. That kind of happens in this.
Oh,
ever so slightly.
I think Ganondorf says Link's name at the very, very, very start.
Yeah, no, like he does. Like it's not quite that, like it's not quite that 1-to-1. But those were where I was like, oh, right. Like you know me,
you know me. Yeah. What is that? Who says that?
I don't know, but like I know
that's in a movie. It says they say that they're like, you know me.
Oh, Iron Man says it to Thanos. You're Stark, yes. And he goes, you know me.
Yes, you're right. Thank you.
There you go.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us for this week. I'm itching to go back and see if I skip or blast through all of the Farron Woods in Tears of the Kingdom. I do want to get to Gerudo Town and get back to the center, though, and get back onto that main path and see how it goes.
I would recommend, like, actually skip all the side stuff until you do the 4 temples first and then come back around, because there's, I think, a little bit more opens up then anyway.
Good to know.
I think it's worth getting back on track for a bit and then coming back and being like, okay, there's a funny lull in the story where they just sort of get you to do a couple of fetch quests.
I'll appreciate just bubbling around then.
Yeah.
There's so much of the main map I still haven't explored yet. Like I haven't gone to Tarrytown or that whole area with the spiral on the map or
you should do Tarrytown.
Oh, I know. They've got a whole like construction thing going on there. I know.
I have revised my recommendation. Do Tarrytown now.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't feel like building things.
No. Trust. Okay. It is one of the sweetest things
that I've ever seen. They top Hudson getting married.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's it is incredible.
Okay.
Yeah, I promise you this.
I might do Garuda Town first and then go to Tarrytown.
Okay, all right.
Well, everyone, if you want to hear about what I get up to in Legend of Zelda this week, over the course of this week, tune in next week on the Minimap Cast.
Yes.
hey, thank you so much for listening, everybody. That wraps us up for this week. But we'll be back next week. If you want to keep up with us and keep up with when we release new episodes or when we do charity live streams, for example, you can find all of our social accounts at minimap.au or just the website name minimap.com.au on Blue Sky. You can also go to the website minimap.com.au to find everything else we do, including our other podcasts, our written articles, the stuff we did at PAX. There's a whole bunch of stuff up there. You can follow us on the social accounts individually. Jeremy, where can they follow you on the things?
At Obi-Wan-Jez everywhere aside from Blue Sky, which is jeremy.minimap.com.au.
You can find me on Twitter at kjpalmer_24 or Blue Sky without the _24. I tried changing my Twitch username this weekend, and I was telling you, Jeremy, that I can't change my name to anything that doesn't give me a brand new username that I've never had before. Everything I've ever had before is taken, and all of the very slight variations on those are fine. Like, I could do like KJPalmer_, that works, but I can't do KJPalmer. I can't do KJPalmer_24, but I could do _240, which I've never done. I could do KJPalmer1.
When you sent me this, I did not reply.
You did once.
Yeah, I think I laughed. I have no idea what you should do.
I'm fucked, right?
or find a new thing altogether. And then just, like something that's like not a common word enough, like the word scotch.
But not, also isn't cringe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, you could think of something.
That's why I went, that's why I've been trying to go with KJ Palmer for a while. But turns out Palmer's a really common name.
Yeah. I could be Bradishich basically fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
There's one other Bradishich that I know. And yeah. I don't know him, but his last name Bradishich, there's not many. Mm-hmm. And I followed him on Instagram, and then he followed me back like 6 hours later.
Yeah, cool.
Just because we just have the same last name. And I'm like, I DM'd him.
You're really tight.
Yeah, I messaged him. I was like, nice last name. And he was like, yeah, you too. He's like an artist. I was like, yeah, all right. And he's a good
artist.
Is that it? Yeah, that's it. Who knows where consents?
That's so funny.
Yeah. He like lives in America. Like, I don't have any connection to.
Yeah, not even a hint of a connection.
Like, they might not even be related to us because Bradishich is not a real last name. It was a made up last name.
I mean, they all are.
Yeah, no, but as in, like, it was originally a different last name, but got, like, changed to be more like whatever country was...
Oh.
Like whatever country was dominant of the town that my family is from.
Right.
And that changed, like, I want to say 8 times in 300 years, that we have no way of following our lineage. Like, we have zero way of going back.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah, like, we can go back, I think, about 4 or 5 generations, and that's it.
Wow.
Because then it started to change a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a town that has been hotly contested between a bunch of different Euro countries for a very long time until eventually it's just been Italy now.
Well.
It's why Bradishich is not an Italian last name. It doesn't sound Italian.
What is it?
Probably like Yugoslavian, but like it would have been like Bratatek.
Right.
Yeah, weird.
You're right, that's not very Italian at all, is it?
No, I mean, yeah. It's just not real.
Sam in the chat says KJPalmer_cringe. That could work.
You could do it.
Well, yes, thank you all for listening. If you're watching live, stick around. We're about to start the post show. If you're listening later, make sure to give us those also tasty 5-star ratings. It helps us out a lot. And just a final reminder, you can support us on Patreon if you want to help keep the mics and lights on. That's patreon.com/minimapau for 5 Australian bucks, and you'll get 24 hours of access, 24 hours of early access to this podcast, as well as other benefits while helping us out greatly. Yes. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We're going to head on out, but enjoy the rest of your November, and we'll see you in December. Goodbye.
See you in December.